You're listening to Shooting the Spiritual Shit on Entheos Radio. Join Revolutionary Sarah Beek and Soul Whisperer Elisa Romeo as they dish about spirituality in a raw, real, and radically feminine kind of way. Warning, this show ain't spiritually correct. The ladies will get personal, and they can be provocative. This show best serves open minds, fiery hearts, and those who dare to disturb the universe.
Welcome to Shooting the Spiritual Shit. This is Elisa Romeo.
And this is Sarah Beek. And tonight we have the honor of interviewing Jennifer Posada, who is an internationally known oracle, channel, lecturer, author of The Oracle Within, Living the Intuitive Life, and the creator of the sound healing CD Soul Sounds. She is also a living legend, a cosmic powerhouse, a sheer force of nature. She is a brilliant brushstroke across the universe and a shimmering, blazingly bright superstar, and she has committed her life to showing you that you are all these things too. Jennifer was born as what the Tibetans called a toku, one who remembers their past lives and soul journey in a continuous line and therefore their purpose in this life as well. It has been her mission since her earliest years to share teachings of self-love, as she believes that the healing of the world will happen with one person loving themselves at a time. Jennifer and I personally connected years ago, and I just totally fell in love with her. She is such a soul sister and someone I'm just delighted to be hanging out with again this time around. So welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much, Sarah. I am so happy we've connected this time around as well.
Well, we have many, many questions for you, but I think we'll just begin by asking you some basic things, which is just, what is an oracle?
Ooh, that's a fun basic. I'm actually making a video on that tomorrow, so this is perfect. Yeah, totally on my mind. Well, a lot of people ask me what an oracle is because, obviously, I use that term, and I'm always talking about how we're all oracles. And one of the first questions people have is, you know, is an oracle any different than an intuitive or a channel or a psychic or a medium? And the answer is no and yes. So no, it's not any different necessarily, in that an oracle can be an intuitive, a channel, a medium, a psychic, and usually is or would be. But I always like to describe an oracle as one who remembers or one who knows themselves. So, you know, the more famous oracles around the world would be like the Oracle of Delphi or the Chief Oracle of Tibet. But really the oracular tradition goes back as far as when the earth became solid, which are some of my earlier memories. And essentially for a long time on the earth, we were all living in bliss and it was pretty awesome. And very slowly this wave of forgetting began. And as people began to forget, the others around them would remind them, oh no, you know, remember, we're pure love, we came from pure love, we chose this, everything is good. And that worked for a while, and over time the forgetting became stronger and whole communities were forgetting, and slowly those who were left that remembered that we came from love and we chose this and what we really are and our divinity became what is now thought of as the oracles. So they simply reminded others. And you know, oracles are also defined as any person, place, or thing that is self-revealing in some way. That's sort of my way of describing the dictionary definition. So an oracle can really be anything. And I always say that we are all oracles. We are all self-revealing. We all contain all the information in the universe. So does every leaf, every tree, every animal, every thing. But I do feel that some of us, and have certainly experienced this, have really honed our skills, spent time on these mystical paths. The term used may not have been oracle, but a lot of those of us who have done that along the way are remembering again now in what I call the great remembering after the great forgetting, which is still occurring, but the great remembering has begun. And we're remembering ourselves even more fully than ever first, so that again we can remind others and we can all come to that place of knowing ourselves truly.
That's beautiful.
Thanks.
How does sound tie into that? Because you do sound healing. So what is a sound healer and how does sound remind us?
Yeah, good basic questions, guys. These are big ones.
We're going on one first.
Right. I'll try to give my nutshell version of that one, too. So we all know everything is vibration. And when I was much, much younger and I used to say that, I thought I was just saying that from intuition, and I was so happy just because it's lovely to know that science had already come to that conclusion a long time ago. But anyway, we all are like a living, breathing song of many different vibrations, and everything is, and we're constantly interacting in a harmonious or non-harmonious way with all the other vibrations around us and within the cosmos, which again is kind of big. What I feel is that we have this incredible opportunity to work with sound through our voices, and even those who have very little or no ability to work with their voices have the ability to work with instruments or to work very intentionally with vibration in a non-vocal way. In any case, we have our voices with us all the time. And you really see that babies and animals, they instinctively know how to work with sound, how to use sound to express their emotion, to bring themselves into a different state. So we kind of get quieted as we get older. We're supposed to hold it in and be presentable and not draw outside the lines and a lot of other stuff. But anyway, it's fantastic to re-access those sounds, and sound has been a part of these oracular traditions around the world and all the mystical traditions around the world pretty much in all the history we have and all the prehistory for those same reasons. And so sound is an incredible way. The three methods I usually teach are sound, movement, and breath, but sound is one of those options for entering into altered states, for healing and transformational purposes, and then to access deeper levels of intuition, to travel between the realms. I always say breath, sound, and movement they can be like lubricant for moving between the realms, and lubricant is very helpful. So that's just a little bit about sound. There are some amazing traditions that I remember and teach about that used sounds, and I focus on a lot of ancient feminine traditions that worked with sound in really powerful ways, connecting with their intuition, sexuality, and onward from there.
Nice.
Very cool.
So I love how, you know, you are someone who is able to say, like, I remembered this. Mm. So can you tell us, I mean, you were born remembering. So what was that like for you? You know, like growing up as a little girl, like how did you come to know that what you're remembering is possibly different than other people who did not seem to be remembering as well? And like what really was it that you were remembering when you were a child?
Thanks, Sarah. That's a great question. So I didn't realize that I was so different right away. It took me a little while of describing things that I saw or remembered and then being told that, you know, not everybody saw those things or remembered those things or whatever. Luckily, my mom was really open to, you know, and interested in all things along these lines, and that was really helpful for me, that at least I could talk to her and share about what I was experiencing. But I basically remembered my past lives, and I know that that's huge. I mean, I have not still remembered in succession every single past life, which I don't think for most people is necessary, but I have access to them all. It's like having a bunch of filing cabinets, and if and when you ever want to dig into anything, you can. Not only that, though, I can also view anything from the past, even if I wasn't there in a past life. But again, it's really about what's relevant to what I'm looking for in the moment, although certainly past lives spontaneously present themselves to me at times when I'm having visionary experiences as well. But it's an incredible thing because it makes me feel as though, it actually is as though, my entire soul journey has been one experience, that I can remember the way that we think in this lifetime, typically most people, of last week or 5 months ago or 10 years ago, what happened to us, that's the way I feel about the entirety of my soul journey. The memories that I have, there are so many of them, and they are just like something that happened earlier for me in my history. And also when I teach people, I am really so overjoyed to help them access that same gift within them. Because when you have that sense of continuity, I mean, this is what a lot of the mystics around the world have been seeking to do, which is have that continuity, to leave the body but remain conscious and come back in remembering if you come back in. And so you can draw from all the wisdom that you've had in the past. You can draw from the ancient gifts, you know, the abilities you had in past lifetimes as a mystic or in any other way, and bring those gifts back into this world, gifts that may be truly forgotten. So anyway, as a child, I remembered several of my past lives, and I slowly came to the realization, I mean, this was when I was from my very youngest years, even as a toddler, the things I would say and talk about were way outside of the norm. But it was when I was about six, I think, that it really strongly, I realized how different the world was than me, for the most part. And I really realized, because for me the most important thing about my childhood gifts, if you will, was not about being psychic or even about the memories, but about this really strong feeling of self-love, because I was very aware that everything was sacred and that myself, my sense of self, my body, my sense of being in this life was my most intimate form of that sacredness. And so I loved myself, and that's been truly my greatest gift. And it was when I looked around and saw that most of the adults around me who were teaching me the things I, you know, needed to know, like don't walk into a street without looking both ways, that were important in this world, didn't know about that self-love. And so I knew that I was meant to bring what I remembered and this knowingness of self-love into the world with my life. And I guess I should add one more thing. I mean, it wasn't always easy. It was very intense, and it's very intense to be that open to other realms when you're very small and also sort of in a physically vulnerable position of being a tiny child in this world. And there were some awkward times in third grade when I would bring crystals to school and I wore a big bag of my sacred items around my neck, and definitely it made me an absolute weirdo. I mean, I was very teased and all of that, but I wouldn't change a moment of it. I'm so glad for every bit of it.
Is it all past life memories, or do you have future lifetime memories?
I am able to look into the future, but I don't look at my own future lifetime memories. I'm not necessarily convinced that I'll be having future human lifetimes. So, yeah.
I love what you were saying about your childhood. And I got to interview Jennifer for my film Redvolution, and I remember you showing us, I think, some of the items that you used to carry around in that sacred pouch, you know, in as a child. And it was just so touching and so moving. And it was also so moving because I know so many people in their own ways, even obviously if they don't remember their past lives or who knows what, but so many people have that real, honest, startling experience, I feel like, at some point when they're born, be it when they're in the womb even, or when they're a child, of just like, wow, this place is different from where I come from. And this is like kind of a shock to the system. And what I know personally I just find really exquisite about you is because you didn't really shut down and sort of grow jaded about the fact that this place is different. And most humans here don't have that remembrance of just how much love they actually are. And I know for me as a child, I definitely sort of shut down in certain areas or tried to fit in and like tried to do certain ways in order to sort of cover up my weirdness. And I know I'm not alone with it. So it's just something I find is very, you know, refreshing about you and your work. And I think that's part of what also, it's part of what carries through. It's just that remembering just continues to carry through. So anyway, I just want to say kudos. Good job. I appreciate it.
Thank
High
you.
Five.
Thanks, Sarah. You know, I think part of that is, you know, because I don't, of course, think that I think that all of the forgetting, including the times we shut down or forget anything in this lifetime about who we are or whatever at a more essential level, it's all treasure gathering for when we come back to remembering. And I've even said that I don't feel that oracles necessarily consistently remember. I always say, it's not that I never forget, it's that I never forget how to remember. And so essentially self-love was so strong in me that even through times that would have drawn me from myself, I was able to draw myself back. And I think that it helps me then be able to be present for others going through difficult times, because I feel that in some cases it is the oracles who have practiced the most powerfully who actually do take the trips deep into the forest and get totally lost so that they can find their way out, and then they'll always know that way and others will know that way because they were willing to do that. And I've really found that a lot of people just arranged to kind of get dropped in, this is not you though, Sarah, but a lot of people arranged to be dropped in the woods or visiting the underworld over and over and over again until they get so good that it's like they've got it mapped out. And that's pretty awesome, because after that you're not afraid of anything. So anyway, that's my little add-on.
Oh, I love it. Well, I love it. Very well said.
How do you feel like people react to you having so much knowledge and power like this as a young woman? Like when you were, especially when you were younger.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I was a little kid, I don't know how some of the strangers felt or the people that my mom knew felt when I walked up and asked them if I, you know, said I saw brown spots in their aura and asked if I could remove them for them and replace it with the green healing light or what. I suppose mom says that I did that. And I do remember some of that, but I don't know how everyone felt about that. But anyone who was in any way interested in the metaphysical realms was just pleased as peaches that I was this little, you know, woo-woo child that was, you know, so in touch. But later, you know, when I was sort of a teenager, that changed. And a lot of times people think teenagers just think they know everything, right? But that's okay. I wasn't even necessarily, I knew it wasn't time yet to return to doing, I started doing readings when I was a little girl, and I knew it wasn't time yet to return to my path of teaching and doing readings and all of that. And now I'm just doing the teaching. In any case, and then as I started teaching again in my early 20s, I really have found that people have been incredibly embracing. But I feel like people really look instantly beyond my age, and have even, you know, as of, let's say, 8-10 years ago, because they feel my energy and they listen to what I'm saying. I did have a woman once tell me that when she was coming to one of my workshops, she was in her 60s, and she said that a few friends of hers said, "Tell me again why you're going to see this woman in her 20s who's going to teach you something about, you know." And she said, "Oh, no, this is, you don't, you know, Jennifer, she's thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years old. She's got a lot to say." So I feel like people have really looked beyond that because they want to hear what I have to say. And I feel really honored to have worked with all of the people who I've had the honor to share with and present to and speak to in my lifetime. It's really been incredible.
So can you give an example? So when, how do you, I don't think this is a word, but I'm going to say it anyway. How do you miraculize? do you connect with, you know, other beings? Do you connect with guides? Do you connect with, like, your soul itself, all of the above? How would you explain to people sort of what some of your processes? I know everything in your life is part of it, but in terms of when you're actually, going in to receive information.
Great. Another great question. And by the way, I love oracularize. Oh my gosh, that's fabulous. Best new word of a long time, I totally think. Okay, so I oracularize. You're right that it definitely is a part of my daily life, and especially because I've built such a level of comfort with it, having communication with my own inner wisdom and on other levels is definitely something that my life is infused with. But when I really want to, you know, have a conversation, so to speak, I will do one of two things. I will either go to a space where I can, what I would refer to as go on a visionary journey, and I'll tell you what I do with that in a moment, or I will do it during a time when I know that the context is right, meaning that I will already be entering into an altered state naturally. So I always say that sometimes when I'm at a really wonderful dance party, I'll keep a notebook, you know, a little notebook in my purse or pocket, because I'll dance and it's just the information will just be streaming, and without my even needing to ask for anything specific, information that's really pertinent to me in some way will be coming. So I'll go over and sit down and write, you know, scribble down in my little book, and then go dance, and then go back and scribble. Or during a massage, I'll sometimes go into past life visions or other kinds of experiences. So sometimes that will just, it's incorporated. But when I want to take a journey, I personally like talking to my guides, and there's, you know, there are kind of a lot of them, and there are many different beings I could talk to. And then I have some kind of close homies that I really like to go to more often. And we'll have a conversation, and I'm really comfortable with it, so I will actually write as it's happening. I'll just, you know, fill up pages. And sometimes I have specific things I want to talk about, but usually I don't really even need to anymore. We'll just talk or even just spend time together. I do definitely teach people methods for being able to take journeys, very simple structure that allows us to move past some of the obstacles or roadblocks we are sort of brought up with, to even especially having vision. A lot of people feel like they're able to sort of feel it in their bodies, but they can't have vision, and it's really easy to work around that, and I'm really happy to be able to work with. I've worked with thousands of people, and no one's not been able to have vision by the end of working together in the courses. So that's always exciting when people have that breakthrough. So I like to go to my guides because it feels like being with friends, even though I could, you know, visit the Akashic Records or I often just check in with myself. I feel that feelings are very important guideposts for multiple reasons. I mean, they point toward healing and revelation. So a lot of times I'll just be checking in with myself. But the most important thing about even connecting with guides or going to records or doing any of that is that I feel that those things only ever guide you back to your own heart anyway. So I could just have a conversation with myself, but since sometimes it's nice to talk with a friend or hang out with some wonderful like-minded kindred spirits to connect in that way. So that's one of my favorite ways to do it. You're very right. I'll just kind of say one more time that it just becomes this living, breathing movement through you where you're always feeling your knowingness. And if something gets in the way because a lot's going on or energy is running so high or you're having some really challenging experiences in your life, that's the time that it can be especially helpful to say, okay, I'm going to set some time aside and really feel into this and really make a lot of space for this. Or when you're really just getting used to doing this kind of thing, it's wonderful to make sure you really clearly set space so that you can go deep enough to get the full picture. Because sometimes if you're just letting a little blip come in here and there, you think that's the whole message or the whole wisdom, and you go running with that, and later it's like, oh, I looked at only one part of the elephant, you know. So it's good to sit and really go in. But this knowing yourself and feeling yourself, the more you do it, the more the world, this world and the other worlds don't feel as separate anymore. That's something I've heard people really have a hard time with in the past, is the sense that there's the other worlds where everything feels so good, and then there's this world, and there's not enough of a bridge between the two. And so doing this sort of oracularizing type of thing really brings those worlds closer together, and that's what I see happening on the planet. So, yeah.
That's so cool. I'm so fascinated by your memories and how you're remembering everything. Do you remember, like, why you chose Earth in this lifetime or choosing your parents? Do you remember first seeing your mom, like, as an energy and choosing her?
Yeah, I do remember stuff like that. I mean, I've been coming to Earth for a while. A great deal of us have. I do remember lifetimes that are not as Earth-based, shall we say, but were not even as fully physical. You know, they were in more subtle form. There's a lot. I like to call them actually past soul experiences in many cases, because past lifetimes seem to always point toward a human specific incarnation. Anyway, I've been coming to Earth for a long time. I'm kind of partial to Earth, you know. It's one of my special spots.
I've never heard that before. That is a first.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me why. That's fascinating to me.
Okay, great. When I look over all that's happened here, I mean, some of what I've been really into in the last couple years or so is my memories of lifetimes being a nymph. So again, not human, although there was a kinship there and ultimately an interbreeding there, which is a whole other story. But, you know, being so in love with the earth as a nymph, you know, the nymph's entire existence felt like varying levels of what we would think of as orgasm. So it was pretty good. And this is what in what I would call the golden era. I mean, there was a little tricky time there when everything was shifting and it wasn't quite as groovy. But in the sort of golden era, the experience that brought the most ecstasy to the nymphs, or the energy that brought the most ecstasy, was twofold. It was their bodies and the earth. And they really saw no separation. And the earth and nature, you know, what was later referred to as Gaia, was just, I mean, the memories are, I can't even really think about it too much, or this, or we really will be just going way off the charts here. But anyway, it was pretty awesome. And that love connection, you know, with the earth, if you will, is really strong. And then they passed it on to their daughters, the Sibyls, and they passed it on to their daughters, who became the Pythias and priestesses and whatever. And that's not the only lineage or whatever, but it is one of them. This deep connection, and it's so much of what I feel that we've become separated from, and we all know about that, so I won't waste time on that. I mean, we all know about that separation from nature. But I also, it's been my mission forever to keep the remembering on this planet. And so I'm really, you know, super duper invested, and I feel like a big part of what I was holding has really, I've already, you know, done what I needed to. It doesn't mean I'm done with everything. I love continuing to teach, and I think it's so crucial. But a big part of that seed of my part, you know, we all have our own parts, my part of that keeping that seed of remembering through the forgetting until the great remembering had started, you know, it's a seriously epic journey. I got to really do that. I feel like that happened at some point. I kind of felt like that corner turned for me in a very personal way when I went back to Delphi, which is really supposed to be pronounced Delphi, and did a workshop there and brought, you know, there were like, I don't know, 15 of us oracles there, sort of doing an oracle workshop and going to the sites, and just it felt like the oracles returning. And that's only one site of countless sites, but that is also where most of my nymph memories were prior to all that Temple of Apollo stuff. And it felt so powerful, and it felt like I'd come full circle. And then it made me excited about what would be next. Ooh, now what do I want to talk about, and how else can I bring self-love forward? So that's kind of been my journey with the earth, and I just love it. I mean, don't get me wrong, I do find it challenging at times, very challenging, and I would love for us all to be all nymphy and priestessy and priesty, although I know that word isn't quite as sexy, and all that stuff. I'd love for us all to be more open and connective and a bunch of other stuff, and I think that's coming. And, you know, I've exercised a lot of patience, and I think we all have, and that can be kind of difficult sometimes. Then, yeah, I want to be kicking back in the temple and, you know, with you two and other people, and having that seamless experience of getting up in the morning and everything in your day is united completely with that experience of feeling that heartbeat of the cosmos and everything else. And yes, in many ways, it is for me right now. But, you know, it's a little different when you go out to the grocery store. You engage with different energies in order to do whatever it is you're doing in this world sometimes. And definitely not quite so seamless. But, again, I have an enormous amount of hope and faith and knowing that these changes are coming about to be. And I'm excited when I feel the inklings and the movements, you know, underground, so to speak. It's like this welcome rain, you know, or like this powerful movement underground that you can't see above ground yet, but it's happening, and I'm just so glad, you know, been waiting so long.
It's so awesome to hear that you have that hope, because I feel like, and I hear this from so many people, that when I feel into the earth and my love for her and stuff, and then you feel the devastation of what's happening to her every day, it's hard, I think, sometimes to be, for me, here on earth with that happening, you know? So how do you deal with that? Especially with your nymph background, you know, loving her so much.
Yeah, that's a really, really, once again, a great question. You know, I think that I was asked recently how I, you know, deal with that kind of grief about what happens on the earth and all the rest. And I, you know, my response was, I've seen worlds, entire worlds die before. And it was, you know, horrible beyond all description. Even if you were connected to the level of knowing that it was all meant to be and it was all going to be okay and we're all okay, you know, essentially, and it's all perfect, it's still, when you're embodied and connected and walking more of what I'd call the feminine path, whether you're female, male, or anywhere in the spectrum in between, or, you know, anywhere on the beautiful gender spectrum, if you're walking that more feminine path where you're not afraid to be spiritual and have feelings, you know, like really fucking strong feelings, is it okay that I swear?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Good.
Preferable.
I figured,
please.
But, you know. All right,
especially
good.
When you're talking about really fucking strong feelings.
Yeah, that's right.
It's appropriate.
Yeah, you know.
The title of our radio show.
Exactly. Oh, right, yeah. Right. Thanks.
Really fucking strong feelings with Sarah Beek and Elisa Romero. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So when you're not afraid to be, and one of my favorite examples is Isis, who was a full-on goddess embodied. She was fully aware of her divinity. She knew exactly what was up, totally connected. And the stuff she went through in that incarnation, as we would think of her as Isis, was so rough. And she went through periods where she grieved so intensely that she transformed into this old hag and people couldn't even recognize her. And she was like kind of pulling her hair out down by the Nile. Now, nowadays, you know, even in sort of the New Age, we'd be like, oh, well, that's just not spiritual, you know. And I mean, for the most part, we'd think, oh, well, she's just really off track. I should give her some, you know, mindfulness training or something. Like, she just needs to meditate more. No, she really fucking needed to be that upset and go through the alchemy, the powerful alchemy. I mean, she was in that deep soil of the Nile, that dark soil that the word alchemy comes from. And there are things that cannot happen in any other way than going into their depths. And that is huge and crucial for me on the feminine path. But the question was what again?
I guess, yeah, like dealing with grief on planet Earth embodied as, you know.
Right. So seeing the worlds completely perish and that I've seen before, There's been such a grief in that, or even experiencing the forgetting. I sometimes say that when it became really strong and finally even a lot of my sort of, if you will, kind of sisters and brothers that had remembered with me started to forget, it was like having everyone you love come down with Alzheimer's. And it was heartbreaking, you know, even though some of us who were trying to kind of hold the space, we knew that we knew what we were doing in a way, and we knew the forgetting needed to happen. I mean, there was a while we all fought it, you know, like, we can overcome this, and then we surrendered and understood it, but it was still painful. So I've just had a lot of experience with that, and it doesn't make it disappear. In fact, it's something that I have actively been present with, is that grief that has, I think only, I often say, only as we come into the great remembering can we heal the griefs of the great forgetting. So the great forgetting is still happening, right? So the things you're talking about on the earth, it's still happening right now. So it's something that I'm present with. It's something I really honor in myself. And I happen to be in a position, because of how I feel inside, because of the work I do, where I really feel like I am able to also be so present with what's moving in a positive way that it's quite helpful. You know, it's a wonderful counterbalance.
Cool. I mean, does it? So the point is the point of the great forgetting so that we can go through the great remembering?
Yeah, you know, what I always say is that if I were to try to exactly describe, you know, how the great forgetting had to happen for a reason, no matter what I say, I mean, I am going to say something about it, but it will never really ever do justice to why some of the atrocities have happened that have in words. I can never in words explain that away or make it better in terms of, oh, it's all for a spiritual reason, and so it's okay that these, I mean, outright atrocities have not only happened for ever, for a long time, let's not say forever, obviously, and continue to happen every single second. It's not going to just wipe that away. It is something, however, that still, without being able to easily describe how this is true, because it is very much a paradox, has love behind it and will return to love. And when we do return, yes, to that great remembering and to that knowing of love, we will understand what fruits came from the great forgetting. So in my book, I refer to them as fruits that could only be harvested in darkness. And there will be this renewal and this deepened creative awakening in the entirety of the cosmos, in all of creation, that will occur as a result of having returned to remembering and having been through the stepping away from it in the forgetting. So, you know, again, even though words can't do justice, that is as close as perhaps we can come.
You can feel it. Well, one of the things you've referenced a few different times are the ancient feminine lineages. And could you just speak more about what those are and why they're so important right now to remember?
Yeah, thank you. I would love to talk about that. So, you know, it is kind of an interesting juxtaposition to be sort of bringing back and talking about and helping people remember their own past lifetimes in these traditions that are very much at their heart based in the ecstatic and based in pleasure and a lot of them based in sexuality. When, you know, again, you kind of put it up against what's happening in the world and it seems like we should be rushing out and, you know, getting in line to be of service in some way that's more direct or whatever. So here's what I believe. You know, really, one of my favorite ancient lineages is that of the Sibyls. And they were very ancient prophetesses, and they were the daughters of nymphs and human men. And there are some variations on that, but that's the essential. And, you know, I remembered that and was really moved by that, and I knew that I could remember that the nymphs did that in order to interbreed with humans and essentially put in some of that, you know, magical DNA. I mean, they were immortal creatures, and to put in some of that magical DNA of remembering and in a very powerful way and pass that forward. And so the Sibyls were only part human. They looked somewhat human. They didn't, you know, look wildly different, but sometimes they were very much larger. Occasionally they would be, meaning they seemed like very, like taller and more big-boned, or sometimes they would be more petite like nymphs, but it was usually that they were a little larger. Sometimes they were very androgynous. In fact, I've referred to them as daughters, but many of them were intersexed. And they lived, because they were this interbreeding, they lived longer. They would often live for 300 to 700 years, usually somewhere around the 500-year mark. And all of this made them very different. But the biggest thing that made them different is that they were unable to not speak their truth. And let me tell you, if you want to not fit in, in fact, it was so severe. I mean, it just wasn't a possibility for them. And so they would go usually, again, this is in more of, if you could call what they had, sort of a golden age, and they were very connected, very powerful prophetesses, and they worked with sound a lot, as their nymph mothers did. And they would go live in their own small communities and just hang out with each other because that worked out. And they would often live near springs and caves like their nymph mothers as well. And it was wonderful to work with the sound in the caves. And they would make it difficult for people to reach them to ask them questions, as prophetesses, because they only wanted to deal with the people that were serious, that really powerfully wanted to be there. So they'd make it scary to approach them, scary passageways and stuff. They'd write their prophecies on leaves and leave them at the opening of caves. And if they didn't, people didn't come in time, it would blow away the prophecies, and they'd have to kind of put them back together or try to find them. Or they'd put codes in the prophecies, so the first letter of each thing they wrote would really be the answer. I mean, they wanted people to work at it and show up and want that. And they were often seen as sort of wild women. You know, their hair, when they'd give a prophecy, their hair would be everywhere, and they'd be sort of foaming at the mouth. Some of these ancient oracles and prophetesses foamed at the mouth because if they were smelling the gases from, you know, sitting on the fault lines and all of that, if at certain times of the month there would be a shift in the properties of the gases, and that's what would make them foam at the mouth. It was kind of toxic. But anyway, I think the Sibyls also foamed at the mouth because they just were fully in their animal selves. They were able to go there, and they were able to be in that ecstatic madness and to navigate that. And there's so much power in that. So these ancient female lineages, we can learn a lot from the Sibyls because we are returning to a time when service is not so much about, or really not at all, about sacrificing yourself and sacrificing your needs and putting everything aside, you know, to just focus on being of service. The powerful way to be of service now is to completely shift the paradigm. I like to kind of call it a non-paradigm that we're going into, but you know what I'm saying. Make this radical shift where we totally focus on where we find our joy. And as we do that, we fill our own cup, and as we do that, it overflows, and we can be of service in ways we could never have imagined. And we shift the focus from suffering through life and thinking that that's the way to be a role model to bringing back a way of living that is actually infused with connectedness and joy. But of course, we have to fight against everything we've been taught about not focusing on the self. So it can be really tricky at first, but I always say being truly selfish or self-absorbed or arrogant is actually due to a lack of self-love. It has nothing to do with loving yourself too much. Trust me, you can't love yourself too much and when you truly love yourself, and it only makes you more aware of how to be present in the world and others and how to be really present for the needs of others in ways that are balanced and authentic and healthy for everyone involved, even if it means sometimes and even strongly being like, I don't think so. So these ancient female lineages really bring forward the power of the body, the power of emotion, the power of living and being outside the lines in multiple ways, and the power of sexuality as through the feminine traditions. And again, when I say feminine, I'm not just jumping to male, female, God forbid, and I'm not just jumping to all the other potentialities of gender expression. I'm not talking about gender per se, though these feminine traditions were typically practiced by those embodied in a more female form. When I'm talking about the feminine, that's something that anyone, anywhere on the gender spectrum can learn from, appreciate, experience, and has inside of them. So yes, these were female traditions, right, for the most part, but the feminine is something that's not limited to that. I mean, many of us who might be in male or male-identified forms now were female back then, so, you know, or vice versa. So there's a lot of wiggle room there I think a lot of people aren't aware of, but these feminine traditions, they bring back everything this world is pretty much missing, and they also really allow us to incorporate the whole. We don't have to be human and divine as two separate things. We can be what others might think of as sloppy, vibrant, wild, beautiful. We can be sassy and, you know, we can experiment with levels of being that a lot of spiritual traditions would not embrace. And that's being out on a limb, that's exploring beyond what we've been told is okay, even by so many forms of spirituality that are considered to be on the fringe, not all of them, but it's an incredible direction to look in, incredibly liberating. And again, when we can welcome the whole, then we're not waiting anymore. And then the world really begins to transform. We're not waiting for when we're perfect and we can really sort of say, oh, this part of me is okay now, or when I get there and I reach perfection, we can say, you know, even if I'm going through the dark night of the soul and feeling it fully, I can embrace that as part of loving myself. And that doesn't always mean like, oh, and now I feel great, la-di-da. I always say, you know, even when you're crying on the floor and on the cold tile, it's better with a pillow, right? So self-love is the pillow. It just makes everything that much softer and begins to glue together all the different fragmented parts, not only of the self, but of all of us here on the world and how we see the world and each other. And it brings in this healing energy. So much of this is what I feel is connected to what I would call the feminine, that once again is so missing on this earth that it's like a dry sponge that's just crying out for any little bit of these drippity drops, and yet it's the most repressed energy, especially that of the sexual woman, on the face of the planet. It is the most harshly one of, in case there's a, you know, a little room for some other harshly treated, for instance, having a gender, being a variant in your gender in terms of how you express it or whatever is really harshly responded to. But it's an incredibly repressed energy, and so it is very bold for women to step out and even consider embracing these aspects of themselves. But these female lineages really, feminine lineages really support and give power to and give structure to and energy to moving into embracing those gifts and those aspects of ourselves and bringing it back into the world. And the level of change that that can bring, one woman, and I always say it's not that I'm leaving out the guys or those who do not identify as female, but I feel that as women and those who identify as female really step in to what I'm talking about, only then will we really have a chance for the true sort of more masculine to come forward and be known. It's really completely unseen as well, because we really just have the unbalanced masculine as being so much in the forefront. So as this feminine comes forward in the world, just one woman starting to shift and embrace and understand so much about herself as a sexual being, as being able to embrace pleasure in her life, embrace self-love and the wholeness of herself, feel more connected to her knowing, etc., has a ripple effect that is so profound, I can't even put words on it. And I think that even if we all, well, maybe not if we all, but if those of us who are conscious all ran out and spent, you know, 12 hours a day doing everything active we could, I think it would be so much more powerful, potent, faster, and effective to awaken the women and watch them. I always say to women in my courses, when a woman really embraces her power, she can just move her freaking pinky finger and universes collide. And I believe that with every fiber of my being. And so that's a big part of what I've committed my life and work to.
Do you have any memories of yourself in male form? And do you remember how consciousness was different through the masculine?
Yeah, you know, I do, and it wasn't all that different for me, but I found out that I'm, you know, I'm just different in that way, meaning that I also don't feel different than I did when I was 14, or very different than I was when I was 8. I have this sort of continuity of self, and so for me, being in the male form, certainly every incarnation was different and had its different flavor, but I don't remember the being in the male form as being like this, you know, radically different consciousness or anything like that.
Well, I love what you've been sharing about the sexuality and how revolutionary it can be for women, especially, you know, for women who have really been in the more like conscious forming communities or spiritual traditions or even New Age groups. It still, you know, has a ripe history of just so much repression of what is sexuality and why is it important to spirituality. And I know with your own work, from what you have told me and like shared and just, you know, what I can just see on your beautiful website, there's really been what it feels like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but more of a turn in your work towards the power of the sexual and the pleasure and the ecstatic as your focus. And can you just share, I mean, you just shared so many wonderful things about it, but also, like, with the women that you're working with, like, why did you feel called to turn more in this direction, especially with these, you know, these groups and these classes that you lead?
Thank you for asking that. And you're right, I did actually commit this entire year of 2012 to only teaching about sacred sexuality, whereas in the past, I would divide the year between teaching about, I teach courses by phone, so I can teach people around the world, which is really wonderful. They can all be in their comfy homes, you know. And so I would teach, in the past I would divide up the year between teaching about self-love specifically, sexuality specifically, and intuition. And then I would have special courses about specific lineages or practices or whatever as well. And I decided this year to only teach, I created my program, the Sexual Woman Ecstatic Enlightenment Training Program, also known as the SWEET program, which is fun. And so all of the courses are along those lines, and I did that for very specific reasons. One is because I feel it coming to the forefront right now, and I feel so passionate about it. And 2012 felt like exactly the time to put this powerful message out there more. The other reason is because women were so much wanting it and asking for it. And in the sacred sexuality courses, I mean, certainly in the intuition courses, having people be able to have deeper access to their own knowing is phenomenal. And people would walk away and, you know, write their own channeled books and just whole things open from that. But and certainly with the self-love work, that's so in alignment with the sexuality teachings. They overlap a great deal. But with these sacred sexuality teachings, I would have women in their 50s and 60s, and certainly in other age ranges as well, everywhere from their 20s up until, I've had a woman in her 80s in my courses. But these women in their 50s and 60s, for instance, just feeling like they blossomed for the first time in their lives in a way that they never thought that they would. They had completely given up. And watching it just radically change lives. I mean, from the beginning of a six-week course to, like, the end, having, like, job changes, family changes, reality changes, total creative openings that, you know, I mean, just really powerful and potent. And so many women just in tears, I mean, at how radically it had impacted them. So, again, it's not that that hasn't happened in other courses, but the signs were so clearly there. And also a lot of the, you know, the female deities I work with, this is just what they're jumping up and down to support, talk about, give creative energy to. They know it's time, and they know that those who are at female at this time or identify as female or who are strongly feminine are very much feeling it. And there are certainly some really special guys and people who identify as male out there or who are somewhere else on the gender spectrum who are in super support. You know, I always mention that in my writings and other things. But that feeling is coming forward. Women are starting to feel called, even if they're also scared because we've all been taught that pleasure is going to come with punishment and a whole lot of other things. They're feeling called, and these all the energies are ripe to support these women stepping forward. So that's why.
I was looking at your the Magdalene's Fire Sacred Sexuality Oracle course, and it looks so amazing.
Just about to bring Magdalene up.
Yeah, so we got to bring in Magdalene. Magdalene's a big one for Sarah and I, and we talk a lot about Magdalene, don't we all? And we also talk a lot about how there's, you know, sometimes there's, you know, you could call it the true light or the false light or imposters, you know, that can show up as showing up like as different. I'm Jesus, but is it Jesus or is it, you know, a Jesus imposter? So I don't know, just wondering your take on that or what is your Magdalene like? How do you know her and your experience of her? Who is she to you?
Great. And by imposters, do you mean like when each of us as individuals might be communicating with beings? And
yeah,
not feeling sure if we're really talking to the real one or whatever?
Or sometimes I've definitely been energetically working with people where I've seen a being showed up that they experienced as Jesus, felt maybe a nervous system stroking that felt like bliss and enlightenment, and you look at it and energetically that being is playing with their nervous system but having darker intentions and having an agenda, that to me doesn't feel like a true, let's say, Jesus energy, you know?
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah, when I teach people about being able to communicate with their guides and beings, I have an entire portion that's dedicated to knowing, you know, how to know that you're really communicating with a being that has beneficial energy, that is authentic. And after I answer your question about Magdalene, if you want me to, I can go into that.
I'd love some bullet points on that. That sounds amazing. That's
great.
Amazing.
Yeah, I'd be absolutely glad to. So about Magdalene, oh my goodness, there are a few things that stand out to me, and I'm trying to think about the first time that I communicated with her. You know, when you've known someone for a long time and you can't exactly remember how you first met, you just started hanging out. It's a little bit like that. I mean,
where did I first meet her? Yeah.
Yeah, which is funny because with some beings, it's really like I remember exactly. But it's funny. I mean, I could say the same thing about Isis. I can't exactly remember like a first time, but there's been so much goodness. So some of the things that stand out for me about Mary Magdalene. For me, I've described her as sort of the embodiment. She's like the poster child, if I have that term right. I certainly mean it in a positive way, for the sexual woman. So she was, you know, turned into later in the stories a prostitute, even though she was really a sacredly sexual priestess. And so there's the perfect example of taking sacred sexuality that so embraces the wholeness and the beauty of the body and of pleasure and the powerful energy that is involved, that is not separated from spiritual energy in any way, totally a path of spirituality, and she's living it, she's knowing it, she is a totally empowered woman, and then she's turned into a prostitute. I mean, it's kind of, in a nutshell, so much embodies what we have sort of been told, how the attitudes towards sexuality have shifted, and the story many of us have embodied about feeling that what she lived and knew, which was so beautiful inside of us in our own stories, is something to, you know, maybe be ashamed of later or whatever, or separated from then our sense of what's spiritual or whatever. Mary Magdalene is an energy who, the other thing I love about her at this time is that she's been in the background as this like prostitute who later was redeemed, you know, for 2,000 years, right? Give or take a few years. And now she's coming forward, whereas Jesus, who I like to call Yeshua, just because, you know, saying the word Jesus makes me want to gag a little bit in my mouth. No offense to anybody who's into him or his name. It's just, you know, when you've been through, like I remember the lifetimes of where the Christians weren't so groovy with my thing, and it was pretty bad, so, you know.
We call that around here, Sarah and I like to call that past lifetime PTSD, so past
right.
Most traumatic stress is our pastime, yeah.
Right, right.
The imprint of that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. However, I am very cool with Yeshua, a.k.a. also known sometimes as Jesus. I just, you know, kind of like using a different name by preference to have a different association. But I mean, his energy, his heart energy, and I do remember the first time I encountered him was so off the charts I could barely breathe, you know. But so he's been in the forefront, but very much like the unbalanced masculine in the forefront, not the real him. And, you know, for all this time in such a huge way. And now Mary Magdalene has come forward, even like in popular culture, which is just wild, you know, with the Da Vinci Code movie and stuff. So she's really come forward as this more popular figure all of a sudden. And that is so exciting and beautiful. And she's, of course, come forward for a reason. This is her time, and people are beginning to understand not only that she had a place as Yeshua's sacred beloved and carrier on of the lineage and so many other things, but as such a powerful priestess, prophetess, and embodiment herself of the divine, and maybe not every single retelling of the story focuses on that quite as much, but that's what's beginning to come forward. So every time I encounter her, I just feel her incredible passion for sharing these messages, specifically at this time with women or those who identify more as female, and empowering them. And that's really where I feel the strongest heart connection with her. And I'm always so glad that she wants to. I always feel like the beings that want to offer any support and guidance are so thrilled when those of us who are willing to make conscious contact do so and bring forward the information. But, you know, the last thing I'll add here is that usually what she and some of these other goddesses, she and Isis really work in tandem a lot when I'm with them, because Isis is very much in that sacred sexuality vein, and they're like the, you know, cosmic duo. They're like the powerhouse together. Like you guys, you got the groove. Anyway, and so anyway, they've got this powerful thing going, and hold on a second, I lost my thought. Let me have a sip of tea. So they always want to get... They want to, like, yeah, you know, it's going to be about us. You know, we're going to talk about whatever and, you know, this course you're going to teach or this thing you're going to do or this talk you're going to give. And then they offer some portion, but as soon as they can and as quickly as they can, they say, now you talk to me. Because they say that what really needs to be heard is women on this earth who aren't afraid to talk like a goddess, essentially, who don't need to always just defer as well. So it's this beautiful balance because they have so much to offer, and oh my goodness, I'm so glad to be able to offer it. I'm so thrilled, and they are, again, so thrilled to find anyone who's willing to listen, who wants to share sounds that they could offer or words or anything. The messages that they have to offer are so potent and empowering, and what they really want to do is get women feeling that within themselves and offering their own wisdom and stories in a way that empowers women in such an embodied way and brings it home. So there's a beautiful synergy there. So that's what I'd say, I guess, in the nutshell version about Magdalene.
That was awesome.
That's awesome, yeah. And I want to hear your bullet points, too, how you know authentic, loving being.
Okay, great. So I kind of have to do a disclaimer like they do, like when they do medical disclaimers, in that I'm going to be providing information without the full context I usually would get to in a course. So it means that certainly people may be able to just take this and run with it and have total support in identifying the difference. But I'm also not providing the fuller context I usually would. But again, nutshell version. It's good that I'm good at the nutshell version because there's so much to say.
We could talk to you. I could talk to you. Yeah. I have like 40 bajillion questions that will not be answered today.
And I'm like so ready to answer them all. I'm like, let's just keep going. This is just too much fun. So in the nutshell version, I teach people a method of interacting with beings in what I call the buddy system. And I find it hugely important to make your first connection with a guide or guides, which are simply beings that you have some established relationship with, even if you don't know it. I mean, you would get to know it through building familiarity again. You may have that relationship from past lives or a relationship you're unconscious with, but they're kind of your buddies, right, in the other realms. Whereas you can talk to many beings, your guides are the ones you have a closer relationship with in some way, even if unconscious. So I really recommend people begin, and even for a long period of time perhaps, continue to connect with a particular being, or sometimes it's a small group of beings, that they feel some kind of affinity with and that makes them feel incredibly comfortable. So it might be a deity they've always had, like an altar card of, or they've always felt connected to, or one time they had a vision around or whatever. Or if they're more comfortable talking to beings already a little bit, it would be a being they'd met with. But you really want it to be a being you feel that you could talk to or chat with. So I'm always saying that we kind of hold beings or deities as these more high up there, illuminated, floating on a cloud. They've got it all figured out. They're sort of cold maybe and distant. Or they're warm, but, you know, they're just so luminous. And I always say, what if you could imagine, let's say, a goddess like Isis as your girlfriend? You know, she's wearing jeans and she's got hoop earrings and you guys are going to get together at a cafe and you could tell her everything about what's going on for you without making it sound all spiritual and deep and asking her questions just the way that you think you need to and then quickly ending it because you're sure she's busy or whatever, you know, like really getting into it. And this comes from, you know, I've been able to talk to and see guides and all that my whole life beings. But on my first trip to Egypt, I walked into this temple and I saw these beings and they said, come in, sit down. And I sat down and I felt like I could talk to them about anything in the most easygoing way. And I felt so comfortable and good with them. And it really made me aware of the importance of making that zone where you really establish familiarity, trust, safety. You come to know that energy of resonance. So that then when you're ready to branch out, you know, when you've really established connecting on, you know, multiple times, you can, first of all, connect with other beings and sense when things feel off or strange. You have experience. You can also ask, you can ask your other guide, your buddy guide, or again, maybe small group of guides to, you know, introduce you to that other being or check them out. You can use your buddy guides as protective, beneficial energies. I always say we have all the protection that we could possibly need in the universe. But if we don't know we have it, when we waver about it and forget, it's kind of like the ruby slippers of Dorothy. If we, you know, don't know to click our heels together three times and say there's no place like home, they're kind of almost useless. I mean, they have some benefits, but we need to know we're protected. And sometimes knowing we have buddy guides, if you will, helps us know we're protected. It helps our innate, it's kind of like an immune system booster. We've always got this immune system, but we want to support it. So it's also like having a friend in the other realms, kind of like if you go to a new city and you've got a friend who can kind of show you the ins and outs, you've got these pals that you feel really comfortable with. And for some people, it's easy to build that familiarity, and for others, it's really good to stick with it for a long time with your buddy guide or whatever. And you may still always choose to go back to that buddy guide unless you have a special reason for reaching out to others. The other quick thing I'd add, and usually I think I have a few more points, but they're not coming to mind at the moment. They're more minute, kind of less central. But one other thing to keep in mind is that any kind of being that ever says, tells you what you should do in any way, not just, hey, it's really time to embrace your power or something like that, but like this is how you should be, or in any way demeans you, like, oh, you haven't done that yet or whatever, that's not your friend in any way, shape, or form. Beings will never do anything but lift you up that are your friends or are beneficial beings. So ultimately, if people are having an experience where some being is sort of just messing with them but like giving them the love vibe, that's really a case in which it would be good for them to build their skills. And so through a process of saying, you know, if you try to reconnect with that being that is not on a positive wavelength, the true colors will show through eventually. It is doubtless. As long as someone knows how to pick up on the signs of something not being a positive relationship, it's very much like relationships in this world. It may seem all good and shiny at first because they're putting on their best vibe and they're giving you compliments, but when it gets weird, you know, you just have to be able to go, oh, that wasn't really the whole of who you are and you're pulling weird stuff on me now. So it's very much like that.
I love all of what you just said, but in particular, I actually quote you in the book I'm writing right now. I love how you say, you know, I have friends with bodies and I have friends without bodies. And I'm like, the same is true with frenemies, you know? It's like you have that same experience of like, there are certain people and beings, you know, that definitely have a particular flavor and feel to them. And just because they are not in a body doesn't always mean but we think it does. So I appreciate your insights into it because I just think it's really important in this day and age when it does feel like the veils are getting, you know, thinner for a lot of people. And sometimes it can just be very confusing when different information and different beings show up and, you know, grounding into their own heart and into their own self is what I find more often than not, like, my peeps want me to do. You know, the beings that I know I'm comfortable working with, there is such a reminder, which you addressed as well so beautifully, Jennifer, of just that you actually do have the power to know and discern within your own being. And so the true beings continually sort of like point the finger back at us, you know, like, what do you know? What do you feel right now? Like, what's going on in that area? And so it does. It just becomes very much like when you meet any sort of new human being. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the same intuitions or lack thereof, and feelings or lack thereof, and you explore from there. But I like the simplicity of the complexity of it, you know, that it is as natural as any relationship that we have in the human form.
I love that.
Yeah, I love that. I love how, it feels like there's not much a difference between, you know, I love, like, Isis with the hoop earrings. That's so hilarious. I love that. as being a psychic child, I have a four-year-old, almost four-year-old, and he's starting to see beings and all that, and he's going through right now, like, scared of the dark. Do you have, remembering back to when you were four, just starting to kind of see also, you know, dark energies as well, any tips or what you would have wanted to know or hear when you were young?
Yeah, that's a great question, especially because, okay, wait, I want to say two things. I'm going to first just say really quickly while it's in the back of my mind in response to what Sarah just said, I love that you really like reiterated and expanded upon that, because I feel that it's so huge, and so many times in this world people don't even know how to check in with their own knowing about the people in their lives or the people they encounter or the spaces or energies, environments that are right for them or not. They just don't even know how to check in the moment, actually see how they're feeling, or afterward whether something went well for them or drained them or anything like that. And we just don't have our barometers, our feelers out in such a, and yet we're oversensitized, a lot of us, and like way too exposed, so we kind of shut down. It's very awkward and can be very uncomfortable. But I just wanted to say one more important thing about that, which is that I feel that it would be not only so wonderful, and I certainly talk about this a lot, especially around self-love and et cetera, if we were not only aware of the people around us and the energies they present to us and what really feels right to us and what we really know, but also especially around those who are spiritual teachers, quote-unquote, and intuitives and all of that. I've had so many people come to me that, you know, some intuitive told them they were going to go through the desert for 10 years in their life, and they went home and cried and cried, and for 5 of those years they had just seen their life as a desert. You know, and when I really looked at what was there and worded it differently, it changed everything. And they wrote me back and said, I'm not in the desert anymore. You know, they just really believed that person. So really being able to check in and keep doing that as you keep interacting with people and keep making adjustments in your life can be so important. And yes, you know, with beings, with humans, with all that. So now back to your question, Alicia, because it's so good. When I was little, I didn't really, you know, there was nobody around to really say, hey, you should, you know, manage this like this. And what happens is when we kind of turn our light on more and or just let it shine more or whatever, one of the first things that can happen, it's sort of a guardians at the gate phenomenon, but is that sort of like moths that are attracted to the flame, there are some, you know, not so fabulous energies that can be drawn. And I feel that there are two reasons for that. One is because they would like to maybe get some of that energy, but the other is because they are sincerely curious, because at the core of every being, every energy, there is a desire to return to love and knowing of love. It may be so deeply buried that it's farthest thing from their consciousness, but it's always there. It's an inner drive. And so there's also always this curiosity. And sometimes it's slightly more conscious for some beings, less for others. But in any case, when you're little and very open and your light's on very brightly, along come some of those kind of beings. Not that there's anything wrong with moths, I don't mean that, but those energies that are drawn. And it can be really upsetting, again, especially when you're tiny, vulnerable being in the world. First of all, he's got you for a mama, so you're like, he's good to go, because that's one of the biggest things is having an advocate. And when I was little, I used to do things that would make me feel safe on my own terms. So sometimes when it felt like it, I'd be laying in bed and I'd be feeling disturbed, because there were also some disturbing things going on in my life. And especially when those two things intersect, it can be challenging. So I would just turn on my light for a while and spend some time there, I found ways to kind of self-moderate, and then I'd turn off the light again. And or I knew that if I was around another person, it would feel better for me. And also, I didn't really quite, I was so young, think to myself, well, if I expand further on these past lifetimes I remember, I will remember some techniques to do-do-do. And then, you know, but the one of the things that definitely did help, though, is that the choices I made to support myself came from that self-love place, you know, and that's another thing I really, every course I teach is founded in self-love, and especially the intuition work, I make sure that we start with that foundation of love, which was, and self-love, which is self-love is love, and it's the foundation of so many of these ancient teachings as well, the oracular teachings, and so when you practice really powerful self-love, you come from a nurtured place, and you begin to feel nourished in such a way that you can tell what feels right to you and doesn't. You really begin to refine that skill. So as a child, because I loved myself, I was really able to kind of notice, okay, what's going to take care of me right now? What helps? So if I were talking to a child that was experiencing this, I would, you know, sort of encourage them. It seems simple, and you may have already done it, or he may already know some of these things, but to really ask what helps when you feel scared. And it could be, like with any child, a special blankie or whatever, or coming to talk to you or whatever it is. And, you know, outside of that, sometimes if the child is aware of feeling, when they feel most, I would also ask, when do you feel most loved, you know, most safe, most held? And then I would you know, encourage the child to really have ways to enter into that space, like kind of create a space either in their bedroom or, you know, energetically or through habits they might have at those times where they go into the safe zone. Because that's really with self-love what we're talking about doing energetically anyway, is creating a sort of a safe zone.
That's awesome. Yeah, thank you. We've been talking a lot about angel grace recently, and I gave him a little angel that my dad, who's passed, actually left for us on the beach. And the other night, he fell asleep clutching it. It was so cute, and we were talking about bringing angel grace in the room and surrounding him with the white bubble, a hug bubble, as we call it.
Oh, perfect. So you didn't even need my answer.
Oh, well, I love your answer. It's helpful. It's definitely something I'm in right now, you know, and there's that, like, in terms of he'd rather be in our bed every night, you know. So there's that. That's that slippery slope where.
Yeah.
And I feel so much for him and the compassion of, like, but then there's also the pieces of mom kind of being like, you can do this, you know.
Yeah, and, right. Striking the balance there, and seeing if he can find that safety in other ways as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
You bet.
Well, I think we'll probably start wrapping it up, but I wanted to definitely make sure, you know, a few things, like one for you to, you know, tell our listeners, like, how to find you and about your Oracle School and community and, you know, any upcoming classes that you want to talk about or share. I just, you know, please do.
Oh, thanks, Sarah. Well, I guess I'd like to mention a couple of resources. I will talk about the courses in a moment that I have coming up this fall, but on my website, there is so much good stuff. I mean, lots of good free stuff. It's really important for me to put a lot of information out there that people can access and share. So if you, my website is jenniferposada.com. It's my name. And the last name is P-O-S-A-D-A. And when you go there, if you click on free goodies, you'll see that there's access to my writings, which I've been writing for, I don't know, it's like 7 years on the site there, like a blog basically. And I just don't call it that on there. But there are somewhere around 200 writings there. And you can almost just pick any of them, and there'll be inspiration and support. And a lot of people have told me they, you know, stumble upon it and then spend like all night reading posts and crying and, you know, awakening. And, you know, I'm really glad that those are there. I also write Oracle prophecy messages about current energies, usually a few times a year. Those can be super supportive. I just wrote some for the recent really big stuff, the eclipses and the transit and stuff. Those are in the free goodies section too. There are all kinds of other things, audio, videos, good stuff. So that's there. And then, you know, I can't recommend the courses enough. And one of the main reasons is because I know that at some point these courses will become online courses. And while that will really work for some people, I know for sure, you know, I feel for my European students who get up at like 2 and 3 in the morning and get on the calls. Some they listen to by recording, but they get on the calls. They wake up in the middle of their night, listen, you know, have their like froggy voices kind of, and then go back to bed. But anyway, people attend from, like I said, all over the world, many different countries, which is so great. But I won't always be doing these by phone. And right now the groups, you know, they're relatively small. There's a limited number so that there's really this synergy. You can actually feel the group and get a sense of who's there. You know, not everybody shares, but you still really get a feeling for everyone there. And that is special. And also there's the interaction where there is sharing and question and answer. So before all those go to video, I mean, it's just like magical. You wouldn't think anything magical can happen over the phone, but of course it's happening right now, right? But it's incredibly magical. And these, you know, oracles remembering together is just awesome. So as I mentioned, I'm doing my suite program this year, and this fall I have 3 sacred sexuality classes, and I'll just name them because when you go to the site, you can click on courses and you can see all of them, and they're special packages and where you can do them all together, whatever. So the first one is that when you guys were looking at Magdalene's Fire, the Sacred Sexuality Oracle course, and if people can only take one course, I recommend that one. Because it's not just that it's an introduction to sacred sexuality, because certainly people who are, you know, like trained tantricas and, you know, teachers of sacred sexuality themselves have benefited so much from it. It's just very all-inclusive, and you get those powerful sounds from Magdalene for the 7 purifying fires thing. It's just awesome. So that would be what I'd recommend for people, unless they're drawn to another one. And the second course is called there have been so many good courses this year that I'm like, oh, it's called, let's see, I did the 5 forbidden goddesses before, the 5 sexual goddesses return to the serpent power. And it's 5 specific goddesses and their teachings on, and their traditions of their lineages on working with the serpent power of the life force in the body and sexual energy. And then also, you know, working with those goddesses, hearing more of their stories and things like that. And then the last one is called the Sacredly Sexual Priestess Trainings. And that's a very specific course about 4 lineages of sacredly sexual priestesses. And also, it's going to have training for being able to go back into past lives and remember your own lifetimes as a sacredly sexual priestess and what they meant to you and incorporating those gifts. So that was kind of a mouthful, but that's there. And then as of next year, I'll also be going back to the intuition trainings. And, you know, and one more resource for anyone who doesn't take the courses or whatever is my book, The Oracle Within, and that's also available there on the site because it's about living the intuitive life, and it has many different components of that. So those are, I think, that's just about all the best of the resources that I have to offer.
Well, thank you. And I just encourage everyone who's listening to definitely, definitely check her out. Everything that she offers is just really exquisite and refined and authentic. And it just comes from a place that this world hasn't had for a while, you know? So it's something that's just, it's very special and it's very real. And it's also sort of down home, you know, in like the best possible way. So I just really encourage, and especially I think the first time you and I first connected, Jennifer, and I went to your site, I started by reading your writings, and they are just off the charts. Like just there's so many gifts, you know, in each of those sentences. So definitely check her out. It's jenniferposada.com, and it will also be on the Entheos site, so people can also find it there. Under this recording, but it's just been, as usual, just such a joy to connect with you again, Jennifer, and just thank you so much for sharing what you are. We just really appreciate it.
Well, I just really want to thank both of you so much for having me, and thank you for all those beautiful things you said, Sarah. I have rosy cheeks and a big old grin on my face, and I'm super grateful, and it's just so special to connect this way with both of you.
Yeah, thanks so much, and you're welcome anytime to shoot the shit with us. I'm sure we could think of many more questions for you.
Yeah, you guys just call me up whenever you want me. I love this, and I would just love to do it whenever.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Have a wonderful evening, and take care. Mm-hmm.